are you?
Hello, Mason.
Are we on?
Yep.
Good evening, everyone. Welcome to our village board meeting. Would you stand for the Pledge of Allegiance, please?
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Good evening, everyone. We will call our meeting to order. Everyone's here. Trustee Harris.
Here.
Trustee Genrich is excused. Trustee Atwood.
Here.
President Rafter here. Trustee Green.
Here.
Trustee Sampson.
Here.
Trustee Deutsch.
Here.
Okay. We are going to, I recommend we insert a 2A, and that will be to invite our state senator to say a few words, who stopped in to say hi to us tonight. And are there any other modifications to the agenda? Hearing none, I'll accept the motion to adopt the agenda as modified.
So moved.
Trustee Atwood, seconded by Trustee Sampson. Any discussion? All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion passes. Item 2A. Senator Coles, come on up and say hi.
Good evening, everybody.
Thank you for being here.
Well, I came to have my typical visit with Brad, and Brad keeps in touch with me almost as much as you do, President Rafter. And he does an excellent job of, you know, sorting out the issues and imparting those to me and my staff, and we're happy to help you as we can. So, you know, I've got a lot of municipalities and a lot of towns and cities, and I just try to stop and visit with people when I can, and I invite you to come and see me when you can.
And this is your favorite municipality.
This is number one because I live just down this way, which is a good thing because I can go to that Fox River Trail and work out at night, which Lynn does too, I guess. I'll just tell you quickly, your state representative and I testified on a very difficult issue we've been working on for 2.5 years, of rape kits. We both testified together in front of the safety committee in the assembly, and we're hoping to get that passed so we'll have a protocol there. So if someone is violated, we hope this doesn't happen, but it happens, that those kits go through a process and are not lost. Anybody that's followed this issue over the years, kits have been lost. People haven't been able to get justice. Mm-hmm. So this is a very important bill. It's passed the Senate. Now we're waiting for the assembly to pass it and get it signed. So this is a biggie that Dave and I worked on now for 2.5 years. I just want to applaud you for helping control property taxes. As somebody who pays them here, gosh, they're nice and low. Thank you very much. And I applaud you on the recycling. You're pushing recycling. I was looking at some of the flyers out here. I know we've got some issues with recycling, and we've got to figure out a way to get more money back to communities like yours to deal with the problem. But that's all I had to say right now. I'd be happy to try to answer any questions, but I'm already 5 minutes into your long agenda.
Any questions for the senator? Thank you very much.
So polite. Thank you very much, Jim. Take care.
Okay, thank you. Have a good night. Item 3, announcements. The budget schedule. Today we had a meeting between the village administrator, the department heads, and myself to review the budget. The ad hoc finance committee met already. So the next step in the budget schedule is Friday the 8th, when the budget books will be distributed to the village board and department heads. I'm assuming we're still on scheduled for that, and then the budget workshops will be Monday, October 18th, and potentially the 20th, if needed. Then we will publish the budget on November 1st, and we'll have a budget hearing right here on November 16th at 6:30 p.m. I'm sorry to say that we have two resignations from our Economic Development Committee. for different reasons, but Christopher Engerbretson and Jared Schmidt both have been serving on our Economic Development Committee. Both have done a great job and added great things to the committee, and we thank them very much for the time they've spent helping their village. We wish them the best in the future. C, 2021 Fire Safety Poster Contest. The Green Bay Fire Department is sponsoring a fire safety poster contest that is open to all 1st, 2nd, 3rd, 4th, and 5th grade students. Posters are to be related to this year's fire prevention theme, which is Learn the Sounds of Fire Safety. All posters need to be submitted by Friday, October 15th, so they can be dropped off. There's more information at the greenbaywi.gov. Just search for fire poster safety contest, and I bet you find it, because I did. 3D. It's that time of year again. We won't use the word snow, but starting November 1st, there will be no parking of a vehicle on any street in the village between 2 a.m. and 6 a.m. during the five-month period from November 1st through March 31st. March 31st date can change based on weather and our staffing issues, but don't get a ticket. Stay off the road at night. 3E, right? Yep, 3E, Halloween hours. Halloween trick-or-treating hours in the village will be on October 31st, which is Halloween, from 4 to 7 p.m. D, fall cleanup begins October 18th through November 18th. And, let's see. That's it. Oh, that was that. Okay. And all the information's on the website, but weather permitting, fall cleanup collection of leaves and yard waste is scheduled from October 18th through November 18th. The last day to put yard waste leaves to the curb for pickup is November 14th. But please refer to the village website for more information. There's an article right on the homepage regarding that. 3G. Alloway is holding a prescription drug take-back day on October 23rd. There is also an article on the website homepage for that, but it is Saturday, October 23rd from 8 a.m. to 2 p.m. 3H, Department of Public Works, notice to resident. The Village of Alloway is currently constructing Calb Avenue from Lytle Street to East River. As part of that reconstruction, there is an extensive amount of work to be completed at the intersection of Calb and Lytle. That intersection will be closed from 6:30 a.m. Monday, October 4th, which was yesterday. The intersection is expected to be reopened on Friday, October 8th at 6 p.m. There is a detour map on the village website for that. 3I. We're in the middle of Fire Prevention Week. It's October 3rd through 9th. Practice your home during the week. Please practice your home fire drill with the occupants twice a year. Make sure your home has working smoke alarms. Teach children how to escape. Close doors behind you as you leave. And once you get outside, stay outside. If you go to a website called nfpa.org, which is National Fire Prevention Association, I believe, .org. There are lists of games, examples of games and apps and videos and safety tips that you can share with your kids to keep your entire family safe. Last announcement from my end. Today there was an economic development summit hosted by Brown County Executive Troy Strachenbach, where he gave a state of the county. We had a presentation on the economy and the impacts of everything that's going on right now. That was given by Dr. Mark Schaefer from St. Norbert. And then all of the municipalities in the area got to present their village, their city, their town, what's going on, and the opportunities for development. It was a great event, and I know it's the first of many that Mr. Strachenbach would like to hold. Any other announcements? Staff. Hearing none, we will move on to item four, presentation. We have a review of the 2022 CBCWA.
We have Nick Sparacio, General Manager of Central Brown County Water Authority, to provide a presentation on next year's budget.
All right, Nick, welcome.
Yes, thanks for having me. Always good to see you. I want to be respectful of time. I do have a handful of slides here. How long should I take to speak at you guys before we start dialoguing?
Give us what you think is important.
All right. I think I got about 10 minutes worth here. Let's see. Let's back up a couple of slides here. I think this is a few slides into it. I'll pray for the next one then. That's the first one. Well, yes, thanks for having me. We had our budget hearing on September 15th, and the Water Authority Board, which Trustee Sampson is the village representative, the board voted to pass that budget. So our 2022 budget is set, but if you want to jump back to that previous slide, I'd like to kind of touch on the opportunities and issues that sort of influence our budget for next year. And I'm happy to say that there's more opportunities than issues this time around. That's a bit of an improvement. So on the positive side, our members in total are projecting a higher level of water use for next year than was in the past. We're also kind of taking a break from a pretty full capital improvement program. Next year's costs are fairly low compared to what we've seen the last several.
Thank you.
Debt service remains level. That'll be the case until the existing debts are retired. So that's a good thing. It will continue. We are continuing to have active discussions with potential new members. One in particular is going really well. I don't know if you saw that one in the news yet, but I'll touch on that later. Also, discussions with Manitowoc Public Utilities are going well. We have had a number of outstanding issues with Manitowoc, our wholesale provider of water, that we're making some really good progress on. We are maintaining our designated funds and reserve funds at compliant levels, and we're looking at a growing and healthy unrestricted cash balance as well. So those were kind of the positive influences. On the issue side for next year, some of these things may be short term. We do have some additional capital improvements to install in the future, but it seemed wise to kind of take a pause on some of those things, at least for next year. So capital costs will go up again in the near future. It's also very likely that our wholesale water purchase rate from Manitowoc will go up in the near future as well. We've kind of been budgeting for that for a while now, but it looks like that will most likely move forward in 2022 with a rate case to the Public Service Commission on their end. And then one of the last items there on the issue side, it's not a huge issue, but the village is probably seeing this as well. Our investments, the funds that we have in investments and are trying to bear interest, they're just doing terrible. The vast majority of the Water Authority's invested funds are in bonds, and bonds are just not yielding much for returns. So those were the budget influences. From there, the goals became trying to manage this jump in estimated water consumption. Some of it may be due to unaccounted for water leaks within, in particular, the village of Bellevue is struggling with that. And they're one of the main drivers of that overall volume going up for next year's budget. You may have seen that in the news as recently as well. So that may be a short-term jump, but in terms of managing that, I don't want to cause rate whiplash. So I'm trying to make sure that any changes in the rate are kind of smoothed out over the next couple of years here. And same thing with capital projects, the same theory there. Yes, we'd like to see that investment slow down for next year, but we want to keep managing that. Our critical projects are getting completed. The biggest thing we have on the agenda for capital projects this year is a survey of a section of our transmission main that consists of ductile iron piping. And I'll show you that in a moment in terms of the capital improvement program. But it's always our goal to maintain financial stability, and those are some of the key components shown up on the screen. Next one. We've talked about kind of that gap between where we thought water use would go and where it actually went back when the system was originally constructed. We know that story. I don't need to tell it again. This is the story of where things have actually been. So we did see declining water consumption from the start of the Water Authority transmission main to the present day, but that does seem to be stabilizing. Now we use a couple of different projections to kind of figure out where things are headed. And the reality is probably somewhere in between those two trend lines off to the right-hand side. That dashed line is our minimum purchase amount from Manitowoc Public Utilities. So I guess the main point there is we're going to continue to hover around that minimum purchase amount unless we add new members. That's really, the best solution there. So in terms of Alloy's history in water use, probably familiar with this as well. That straight line on the chart is the trend line, and we kind of bounce around that trend line. As you look at the last couple of years, we've been above that trend line in the village of Alloy. The projection for the end of this year was just under 400 million gallons of water consumed. And you can see kind of the long-term history of how the village of Alloy has projected its water use for budgetary purposes versus how it has actually turned out. The village of Alloy tends to overestimate by a little bit, but winds up pretty close to that projected amount. Of course, this year is still in progress. In 2022, the budgeted amount for the village of Alloy is unchanged. You see that there at 405 million gallons. So just to highlight a couple of key expenditures, this is our capital improvement program, our 10-year projects out into the future. And as I mentioned, 2022 is fairly light. A good chunk of the capital program for next year, you see on the bottom of that chart, we have replacement equipment within the transmission system. We also have unanticipated capital that's kind of our contingency for things that may come up, make sure that they can be covered. That's always in the capital program. The biggest actual project is a survey of the ductile iron pipe, and the good news is I don't have any main breaks to report on over the last year, but we did have a break on a section into Pier in 2020, so that's what this capital project is about. It'll cover a lot of the transmission main in the De Pere area and on up to Howard. That's where ductile iron piping was used. And there is some corrosivity to the soil, especially in De Pere. So we've hired a company that will go out and actually test the corrosivity of that soil and see if there are any other hot spots that we can find ahead of time and investigate those and make any needed repairs. So yeah, That's what that is all about.
Nick?
Yes?
The change in unanticipated capital from 50,000 in 2024 to 150,000 thereafter. Why such a jump?
Yeah, so in those future years, in terms of what is known, what's expected, we do expect to see our capital costs kind of taper off into the future. So, these last several years of kind of intensively making improvements on the system, we're tweaking things, we're getting things improved in terms of efficiency, we're adding safety features, kind of getting things to where they need to be. So we're hoping that that's going to taper off. But just in terms of managing the Water Authority's long-term financial outlook, we want to make sure we have something on that line. As we get closer to those years, we'll certainly sharpen the pencil on that. So that's really intended more as a placeholder than anything. Yeah, so as you go out into the future, those numbers are higher because they're more unknown. And then if you look at the replacement equipment line, as you get out to 2027, 2028, we do have some larger amounts out there because we will be receiving a settlement at that time. And we don't have anything slated to use those funds, but the thought is to just kind of give the board and the members a heads up that we do have some revenue coming in at that time. If there are replacements that are due, we'll have the funds to take care of those things. So, yeah, looking out to the couple years ahead of us, we've got a couple other... No, that's all right. We can keep rolling here. We'll go back if there's other questions on that. One of the other things I mentioned as a kind of a key part of 2022 was that we have a growing and healthy unrestricted cash balance, mostly generated as expenses have come in less than budget over the years. So that was one of the things the board took a look at, is what is the best use of those unrestricted funds. And the one of the things that we've been doing with capital projects in the recent past is utilizing our designated fund for maintenance and replacements. So I've got a history of it here. It was created in 2013. The board brought that up to about $2 million balance, and then we started to use those funds in 2019 through 2020. And then we started to replace some of those funds in 2021 as that unrestricted cash balance grew. So the thought with the 2022 budget is to bring that back up to the $2 million mark and actually set aside some additional funds to help smooth future rate changes. Because as I mentioned, you know, this the lower capital project amount is kind of a short-term thing. We do have other capital projects to fund next year. So that's what's been approved for the use of those funds. In terms of our expense picture then, the overall picture hasn't changed much. Our total budget is about $13 million annually. The lion's share of that continues to be debt repayment. Some of the couple items here that have changed, our water purchase expense will be a little higher. As I mentioned, the Village of Bellevue is using more, projecting to use more water. So that translates into a higher water purchase cost on the wholesale end. And then the transfer to reserves kind of shows up on the pie chart this year. It's a relatively small slice of the pie, but it does show up. So otherwise, things are pretty close to how they've been in past years. And then as you take a look, oh, you skipped over one slide there. There we go. As you take a look at how budget expenditures compare from year to year, just jumping to the bottom right there, overall expenditures are pretty flat, down just under 1%. Our operational costs did go up to reflect that greater water purchase expense, but that's been offset by that reduction in capital costs. Now we can jump to the next one, and then as you take a look at those expenses and the impact of...
Okay.
Yeah, that's the one. Sorry, I got a tickle on my throat here. As you take a look at non-rate funded revenues that come in, that the overall the rate supported budget is also pretty flat. It's down by 0.3% for next year. So that reduction in expenses has been tempered by a couple of items, some increases decreases in that expected investment income that usually helps offset our operational costs. But we would like to continue to make contributions back to that maintenance and replacement fund, as I mentioned. So then in terms of the water purchase rate, with all of those factors kind of working together, an increase in the projected amount of water, slight decrease in expenses, the water rate to our wholesale, our charter members can go down. It was $4.97 per 1,000 gallons for 2021, and the 2022 budget has it at $4.86 per 1,000 gallons, so about a 2% decrease. One thing to point out is as we work through the process of amending our water purchase agreement with the members, we have one foot in the future and one foot in the way things have been all along. So we'll continue to charge a flat monthly fee to the charter members for fixed costs, as well as certain operational costs. But we are starting to charge part of the monthly invoices purely on a volume basis. It's just a couple small parts of the budget for now. It's going to be those costs related to the capital program and contributions to reserves. So there will be a little bit of variation from month to month in what the Village of Alloway pays to the Water Authority on that basis. That was necessary to help pave the way for new members to come in, where they will pay purely on a volume basis. And then the vision is, in the future, once the existing debt is paid off on the Water Authority transmission system, that all of the members will pay purely on a volume basis rather than a fixed fee with a year-end true-up.
2036.
Yeah, 2035 it's paid off. 2036 would be the first year where it's not a part of the budget.
For the original pipeline and project and stations.
Right. Yeah. And we will have an opportunity to refund that debt in 2024. We have been monitoring opportunities to refund earlier, and they just have not panned out. It makes a lot more sense to wait until the planned 2024 date. Otherwise, we lose that tax-exempt status. I'm sure the village has been looking at refunding debt as well. All right, so in terms of what does that mean here in the village of Alloway, in terms of the village's wholesale water purchase on an annual basis, it's been around $2 million a year. This shows some of the history over the last several years. So for Alloway, the local share, the village's share of the overall water consumption is down comparatively. If you think about how the Water Authority recovers its costs, it sets its expenses for the year, and then the communities each pay in based on their estimated share of water use. So Alloway is using pretty close to the same amount of water. In fact, the budgeted number is the same. But with other communities increasing, Alloway's share gets smaller. So, the 2021 cost of $2,012,000 compared to 2022 is a little under $2 million, $1,969,000, so down about $42,000. So, about a 2% decrease for 2022 compared to 2021. So, I don't know if this is helpful because it isn't really this simple, but it kind of helps boil it down to, you know, well, what does that mean for an individual ratepayer within the village? If they all paid the same amount, for each of your 5,566 water utility customers, that means the average bill would go down about 64 cents, or about $8 for the year. Pretty small amount, but it's still nice to be able to say, hey, your cost should be going down next year. So looking ahead to 2022, these are some of the highlights we're hoping to see next year. I mentioned improvements in the relationship with Manitowoc Public Utilities. We're expecting to resolve kind of our one outstanding issue with Manitowoc relative to capital repair costs that have been made at the water treatment plant. We have been talking about emergency backup supply for many years. The current source of emergency backup water are the municipal wells. So the goal is to provide an emergency backup supply of a higher quality, hopefully of a Lake Michigan source, very similar to what we're used to drinking at this point. So we have been working on that and collecting some key information this year, hoping that the board will be in a position to kind of make a decision on what scale of emergency backup supply seems to make the most sense, what would be financially feasible. And then part of that conversation, of course, is with Green Bay Water Utility. We hope to have at least some conceptual agreements in place as to what those emergency backup supply options could look like. I mentioned the survey of the ductile iron pipe section, so it'd be good to get that done. I've talked a couple times in the past about the utility collaboration study that came to be known as the SPLASH study. That continues to move forward. We're hoping to work together as a group of utilities to jointly request services along a couple of different lines. So hopefully I can report back on successes there next time around. We do continue to pursue new customers, and if you've seen any of the recent headlines, the Village of Denmark has taken the initial steps to say that they are planning to join the Central Brown County Water Authority. So I'm very excited to be able to work on that. There are many steps ahead of us, but it looks very good. We're going to be continuing with records retention and cleanup efforts, and we're also planning to start putting together an asset management plan for the Water Authority's infrastructure. It's relatively new infrastructure, but we still want to get out ahead of that with an asset management plan. That's my contact information. And thank you to our board members and alternate for being a part of the process.
Very good. Nick, any questions for Nick? Things go well when the numbers go down, don't they?
I love telling that story.
Well, thanks for being so excited about water.
Yeah.
And for bringing us good drinking
water. I should have brought some to drink while I was standing.
There you go.
Yeah, hand sanitizer. I don't think that would work the same, though. All right. Thanks.
Okay,
everybody.
Nick, thank you very much. Okay, moving on, we will do presentation on the 2022 to 2026 Village of Alloway Comprehensive Outdoor Rec Plan. Mr. Clark.
We have been working on an update to our Comprehensive Outdoor Rec Plan for about the last 4 months. We hired Rentler Corporation to assist us with that endeavor. They've been our consultant with this. And we've come to a final draft of that plan, and here tonight to present that draft is John Kinnear and Rebecca Ramirez from Rutler Corporation. So.
Come on up, folks.
Thank you for the introduction, Chris, and thank you, trustees, for having us back. This is our second draft now that we'll be writing our second version. We wrote your last draft of the Comprehensive Outdoor Recreation Plan for the years prior, 5 years prior to this as well. So thank you for having us back. It's a great opportunity. My name is John Kinnear, president with Rentler Corporation. Rebecca Ramirez is here as well, also a landscape architect with our firm, and she's done the majority of the authoring of this work and coordination with Chris in the last 4 months. So we're very pleased with the progress we've made. We've all provided you with a digital version of the draft. This is the draft document that we hope to have move forward at the next meeting and be adopted. I do have that here for reference. And again, this is our final draft of the 2022 to 2026 Comprehensive Outdoor Recreation Plan.
That is a touchy one, Sean.
Yes. Again, we like to start all of our rewrites and documents just by looking at the goals and objectives, starting with the mission statement. So real quickly, it's the mission of Village of Alloway Recreation Department to provide parks, recreation, outdoor opportunities, and green space stewardship for the enjoyment and well-being of all in a fiscally responsible manner. So that's basically what this document does in a nutshell. So that's great. It outlines all the opportunities, looks at improvement, and outlines capital improvements for future park improvements within the village. There you go. So parks, recreation, and open space are very important to all communities. They provide facilities to your community that are very important. They influence the community outlook, the community morale, promote health, safety, and welfare, provide leisure opportunities for all. They're accessible to all individuals within the village. They contribute to social and community involvement and protect and celebrate community history. Again, this is a very rich community, rich in history. And I think the parks and open space do a nice job of accentuating that. Preserving natural resources, connection to nature. The great trail system here gives us those opportunities. Contribute to effective stormwater management and benefiting the community economically. Great parks bring people in your community, and that's something to keep in mind. And to highlight all these points, good planning is essential to that process, therefore the CORP. So just again, what the Comprehensive Outdoor Recreation Plan is it is a formal document that is designed to assist communities in planning and development for parks and open space in the future. It's a document that allows you to receive federal grant. That's the last bullet point, but very important. So having this approved and on file allows you to pursue grant opportunities. It identifies those funding programs, integrates recommendations, also gives us a chance to look at where are we. One of the great things in the introduction section is we get to revisit what have we done in the last 5 years? What was the result of the last version of this CORP? And we get to highlight some of those projects that were done, capital improvements that were completed, and that gives us the opportunity to look forward. What do we want to tackle next? So again, this document allows you to apply for grants and covers a variety of information here in our sections. There's 8 main sections and an appendix in the book. Briefly, the sections include, one, an introduction, the plan and purpose, the mission statement of the village, the goals and objectives of this document, how are you going to use it, how is it going to help the improvement to parks and recreation, past planning accomplishments, as I mentioned, the planning process itself within the document. Section 2, we get into the community description to really help users of this document, people that might ask you about parks and open space, why do we need this, why do we need that. It gives you history and context, demographics, the physical and environmental characteristics of your community in current land uses, all very important to consider as we look at improvements. We go through NRPA classifications. So National Recreation and Parks Association has defined what types of parks, what characteristics go toward the type of parks. There's neighborhood community parks. That helps us in our inventory define what types of parks you have within your community. We then assign each park a park classification and inventory it by park, the location, some defining photographs of each park, the location within the village itself on the key to the left, and then just a bullet point list of the amenities within the park. We do that for each of your parks. We put a map together with the park locations by park type, so the neighborhood, community, special use parks are all called out there. Other park amenities, the trail system, some of the other lands that are not village-owned but within your community, and then special use areas as well. So those are all shown so you can get just a really good view of where the park and recreation assets are within your community. We then provide a matrix, again, each park, and it shows what elements are in each park, just on a one-page glance, very handy for concluding the inventory of what park assets we have within the Village of Galloway. Once we have the inventory done, we can begin to analyze what are the parks. You know, we know where they are, we know what type of park they are, but what do they have? So there's 12 village-owned parks with NRPA-classified parks, such as 6 neighborhood parks, 3 community parks, and 3 special-use parks within the village. Our analysis approach, we take 6 steps to analyzing the parks. We look at the National Recreation Park Association acreage standards. Acreage standards being how many acres per 1,000 residents you have, so that we can start to establish benchmark. It's not a pass or fail grade, it's really just a benchmark based on a national standard that gives us a starting point. We then look at regional parkland comparisons. What do other communities have around us? What are they showing for acreage per 1,000 people in the municipality? We then look at the service area. That is the proximity of the parks to your residents. And then look at the service area with population and land use patterns. So, you know, just because there's an area that may not have park service per se for the definitions, is that a government institutional or an industrial or commercial area where there isn't a population center? So we do look at that very closely. And then the recreation standards and community input, most importantly, community input. We started this process with an online survey and had many other opportunities for community input to help guide which improvements are needed within the community. Again, with our analysis, we found that Village of Galloway, overall, we're at 14.27 acres per 1,000 residents. Parkland average with the regional Parkland analysis was 15.64. This is actually well within the top third of communities around here. So overall, we're doing very good with how much park land is available to your residents. Being landlocked like you are too, it's a good thing. There's not an effort that needs to be made. The NRPA recommendation is 7 to 10 acres per 1,000 people based on your size and your population. So we're at 14.27 acres. We well exceed that recommendation. So that's good. We know we have enough land dedicated to parkland, and it's what we do with it then at that point. Again, the map here, the service area evaluation map, this is just a good glance at where your parks are, where the service coverage is, and where there's some open areas. We do take into account barriers and buffers, Webster Avenue 172, those service area circles stop. But then we, again, look at it with land use and see that most of the areas have access to park areas. There's a few residential areas, although they would have access to trails and other facilities to get to the parks. So, and if we do continue service areas, we do have some coverage. But overall, the community is very well covered with parks and walkable service areas. The needs assessment, we did online surveys with the community user groups and staff. We had public input meetings in person and virtually. Got very good feedback from the online surveys. Basically, we found some unique information, kind of note: Green Isle Parks most used, followed by Rush Family, East River Trail, Alloway Trail Connection, East River Parkway, Kiwanis, and Optimus Parks. 88% of the folks that took the survey are satisfied or very satisfied. This is very good feedback from your community saying what you have is working well. And then the park amenities that were highest rated within the village are trails, the restroom facilities at the parks, and the playgrounds. And the most requested additional amenities, more trails. So people love your trails, and they want more. That's what that means. And then the most used amenities in other communities. So where are people going to surrounding communities? What are they using? Trails and aquatic facilities. So Alloway residents like trails. That's what we found, which is good. That gives us good focus for future improvements. So then we move into recommendations and implementation strategy. We write a recommendation for each park based on that analysis, based on that feedback that we've got in discussions with staff, and have a very detailed capital improvement schedule. Now, this is a high-level planning document. This is not a CIP that you're approving. Any dollars that are talked about in this document are not being approved by adopting the CORP. It's simply a 5, 10, 15-year outlook with some costs to go along with it. So when we do talk about park improvements at board meetings, we can open this document up, get a good vision of what those improvements would cost before a formal master plan is put into place, before any capital budgeting is approved by the village board. So it's a planning document, high level, and we want to give you that vision of what would these improvements cost without having to go through an entire planning process. It's really a thumbnail guide to future expenditures. So some of the highlighted improvements that we have that we came up with in this 5 years, again, a lot of the former document, a lot of those projects were successfully completed because it's in place, because there is vision for the future. Some of the top 5 that we came up with in talking with Chris and looking at the improvements, we have parking lot improvements slated for Kiwanis, Riverview, and Webster Parks. Rush Family, East River Trail improvements in alternative routing due to flooding concerns. That was a lot of the feedback that we got from the community. So looking at getting around some of those problem areas or improving some of the trail is in this document. Playground equipment replacements at Webster, Sunlight, and East Lawn Parks. Outdoor fitness equipment in general at the park sites and locations. Restroom upgrades, and then the splash pad was another element that was a very very popular that we have within there. So that's just some highlights, some things that we have to look forward to with this new court that were not part of the old document that we just updated. And then just an overview of our process again. We started with data gathering. Definitely wanted to get community input and got many different input sources for that. Had our draft review sent to staff September 1. We did present to Park Recreation and Forestry Committee on September 28. We have our final draft before you this evening. We're here to answer any questions, allow the public to have input on it this evening, too, and then I believe it's the next board meeting.
One in the future.
In the future, where this would be officially adopted. We would then mark this final and provide the prints for you to have on file. So with that, thank you. And any questions at this time, I'd be happy to field any questions you have.
Thanks, John. Any questions?
Sure. The nature of the survey, when you say people expressed an interest in even more trails, my guess would be that we have pretty good trails in the existing parks. One thing we hear, and it has more probably to do with street connections from the East River Trail to the Fox River Trail, did this survey, or does this project get at that at all, or that's not in your purview because it's more of a street,
that's more
larger
the,
planning thing.
Yeah, that's more in the comp, the bike and ped plan would cover that. However, we do touch on that you know, getting to the trails and having improvements to get to the trail systems. It is, you're absolutely correct, we are very well covered with the trail system within the parks and the recreation facilities. There was a ask for improving those. Some of the comments were in those areas where there is flooding. One of the items we have in here is to do a study, to have an engineered study done to find out where that is, where the problem areas are, and maybe having some small alternative routes for when there is trail flooding. It wasn't necessarily asking for more and more. It was mainly asking to, you know, build upon what's there, have some alternate routes, especially with those flooded areas. But then for street connections and then anything within the street network, that would be either bike or ped plan or the comprehensive plan itself where that would be addressed.
Okay. But were you struck, did you get a lot of feedback on that issue, although it's not really part of this plan? Was that something that came up time and time again, the connection from one trail to the other across the village?
Yeah, there was feedback on that. And, you know, and it talks about in this plan how other plans that the village has worked on, how they all kind of meld together, mesh together, and work upon each other, and whether that's the bike and ped plan or some of our street reconstruction type of plans or, you know, some of those things. So, but, yeah, you are correct. Some of the biggest ones are trying to get that east-west connection now, you know, from the Fox River Trail to the East River Trail.
Okay. So putting words in your mouth, we've got a plan that says people really like the trail. You said it, put word like the trail.
Yeah.
But you also got some indication that they would like it even more if we could continue to improve. Maybe not just within the parks, but
yeah, access to the trail system. Yeah, that's feedback that we did get.
Okay, thank you.
John, you said you took a look at the facilities we provide and what other surrounding communities provide.
Mm-hmm.
Any glaring misses that we have that we need to add and improve on? Or?
Yeah, one of the highlights was when we ask your residents, where do you go outside of Alloway? What facilities do you use? Aquatics is one of those. So one thing we've identified here is the splash pad, which would really go a long way in addressing the aquatics. It doesn't necessarily need to be a pool. It's more that summertime access to an outdoor water facility like that. The aquatic centers are what people are using, and that's easy to say, but very difficult. That's more than a line item in a corp. When we do talk about an aquatic center, that would be something that would need to go through a lot more vetting and analysis at a board level before we even consider putting something like that in. But I think a lot of the markers are being hit here. a lot of the capital improvement plan elements here for future capital improvement planning. Really build upon what you do have. Look at some of the recent successes with pickleball, things like that. So I think a lot of the adjustments, a lot of what your constituents are looking for are happening. And having a good, a usable document, a working document, rather than just a document, these really have been successful in the last 5 years. We're hoping to see that success again to keep these capital projects moving forward, keep this a very handy document at your fingertips so that it can continue to be used. So I think overall, we didn't see any glaring gaps in the facilities that you do provide.
Are there any trends outside of the area in the parks world that something we should aspire to or create a vision for?
Yeah, I think you're hitting a lot of the trends right now in parks and recreation, pickleball. You know, we're addressing that. That's highly successful. Maybe looking at other locations throughout the community. The splash pad, I think, is a big item. Many communities are wanting that for the affordability of it compared to any other aquatic facility, and giving that opportunity for summertime use. You know, I don't see any real trend that isn't where we're missing the mark in converting space and utilizing the space that you have to meet those current needs. So I see a lot of them in place already.
Okay, great. Thank you. Any other questions, comments, thoughts? You didn't let Rebecca talk.
I just got a thumbs up. So yeah, she did most of the talking here anyway. She did a great job authoring this document for you, and thank you for the opportunity.
Thank you, folks.
All right.
Okie doke. Moving on. We will go to item number 5, public comment. Is there anyone in the audience tonight who would like to speak on something that is not on the agenda? Come on up. Nope. We'd like you to come up, give us your name and address.
No blood sugar here right now. Okay. Melissa Chambers, 2575 Beaumont Street.
Thank you, Melissa.
And I am speaking. I am concerned right now there's the big rodents or construction that's going on Beaumont. I do live on the corner of Beaumont and Summit, so I dealt with it on Summit 2 years ago. My concern, I guess, right now is I came home the other day and there's going to be a refuge put in on the corner. So basically what it is, from my understanding, it is a corner piece of concrete. So typically you would see it where there are sidewalks connecting. However, the proposed sidewalk that's going in is going in on the west side. There's no sidewalk on the east side. There's no sidewalk on Summit at all. I'm just very confused as to why it's going in. Also, with it being included, it digs into the root system of my trees that I value a lot. So I have talked to other professionals. I've talked to people who are on planning commissions for other areas in Letchview, don't understand the purpose of it. I'm a purpose person myself, so I guess I just want it to be publicly known, because I've talked to multiple people who don't understand why this would be happening. So, yeah, that's what I wanted to share.
Thank you very much. Are you aware of that?
Yes, I can address her questions. Want me to do that now?
I would do it offline.
Okay.
Because this is just public comment. But he's the man. Have you met Sean?
Yep, I have. Okay. I have. I'm your best friend.
She said that with a little sarcasm. The gentleman from the paper wants us to create scandal. Can we create scandal on this?
We go for Image and Morale was on the top for Parks and Rec, so we have to help out Image and Morale.
Okay. Well, thank you for bringing that to our attention.
Thank you.
Is there anyone else who would like to speak on something that's not on this evening's agenda? And thank you for being here, by the way. Bearing none, we will close public comment and move on to number 6, action regarding the 2022 Webster Avenue concrete pavement and sidewalk repair project. Oh, he's gone. He'll be back.
Can we jump ahead?
Let's jump ahead to number 7. We'll come back to 6. Action regarding 2022-2024 Brown County Sheriff's contract.
Yeah, with us tonight is Deputy Sheriff Brad Brodbeck. Did I say that correctly?
Very close.
Very close?
It's Brodbeck.
I always had the Deputy Sheriff. Yeah, our contract is up with Brown County. We've been contracting for services for Brown County since as far back as defined as the 1970s. Throughout the course of this past summer, once the contract was sent to us, or to me, we've been a lot of dialogue back and forth to kind of dive in a little bit, to have a better understanding on where some of the costs are coming from. And I think Brad's here to, excuse me, I'm sorry. Brad's here to address some of those questions. The dialogue has been great. Again, the service that we get from Brown County is top-notch. I think about that. I think I'm going to turn it over to Brad and kind of go through the contract. It is a 3-year contract. Majority of, and I don't want to steal your thunder, but the majority of the increase is resulting from our investigation costs. Again, the amount of investigations are a 3-year average. And even though 2020 was a lockdown basic year, our number of investigations was really high, with 50% of those occurring at GBCI. And I think we all know the story about how we are charged for that, and it's our responsibility per state statute. And we've addressed it in some manners. And as far as the state of Wisconsin, with the help of the sheriff, we are reimbursed $60,000 a year for those calls to GBCI. Although we can cover everything, it's a step in the right direction. And there is some potential legislation coming forward which could help close that gap even further. So.
And how big is that gap?
Our investigation, I believe it's roughly, we're anticipating around $100,000 a year. It's associated, and that's because it's a running tally, costs associated with issues with GBCI.
There's your scandal.
So, you know, we're doing our best to maintain or to curb that problem, but it's going to take a lot of voices and we keep speaking it and it'll be heard. Okay. With that, I'm going to turn it over to Brad.
Thank you. Good evening, sir. Thanks for being here.
Thank you for having me. All right, so basically, I don't want to go through the entire contract, but I'll certainly try to answer any questions you have. With the 2020 was a little bit of a skewed everybody's numbers. So basically for this contract, all of the contract villages did agree to a 4-year average because of 2020 is somewhat of an anomaly. So that's how the numbers will work out. The contract basically is very straightforward as far as following how it was done in the previous contract. I know there's going to be some questions, and not to get ahead of myself on those questions. So if it's all right with you, I'll just go right to questions on the contract portion. Then I do have with me tonight the breakdown for the body cam portion, which we're looking to move forward at the beginning of the year, at the beginning of 2022. Sorry.
Okay. What are some of the highlights from this agreement that you, from your perspective?
Well, from my perspective, I think we're able to keep costs relatively low, and I know that's depends on who you're speaking to, how you feel about that. But we were able to keep the administrative costs
the percentage stayed the same. I know that has been brought up at other meetings I've been to. The sheriff fought to keep that at 5%. There was interest with HR and the administration to raise that because of the climbing costs throughout the services that are provided. So I think that is probably the shining point. Everything else is basically following what we've done in the past. The numbers haven't really changed drastically other than how it was laid out. The body cam portion, let me just get into that first.
Yeah, why don't you tell us about that?
So we are going to move forward with Axon. Tonight is actually public safety, where that's, if we get the blessing tonight, they'll go to full county board on the 20th. We're going to do a package deal. Axon is the maker, the company name of Taser. So they just changed their name because of the products. So their body cam, their fleet, which is the squad cam, will also go to their interview room cameras, and then a new Taser program. So with that, we get a significant savings by bundling all the products. That is a 5-year contract. Not to bore you too much, the current climate that we're in, this has always been something that was looked at, but because of the cost, we weren't ever able to move forward on it. Now it's become an expectation. We're actually the last agency in the county to be moving forward with body cams, and everybody, once we move on it, every agency in the county will have the same operating system, which is Axon. There's a ton of benefits to having one operating system for starters. The DA's office will only have one system for receiving discovery and for sharing it. That'll go out to the DA's. Everything is electronic. It's cloud storage. It's unlimited cloud storage. There shouldn't be any additional costs beyond the contract. All of the hardware is included and replacement is included. The benefit to everybody that pays taxes is that this, of course, provides the transparency that some people are after, but really it will immediately become a police tool and help provide better evidence to the things that we're working with. And with that, you get less court time, there's a better chance of prosecution. There's just a ton of benefits to having that other piece of evidence that we don't currently have. Then the product itself, everybody having the same system. As you know, we moved to a new records management system. This is already integrated with that. We moved to a new CAD system for dispatch. It's integrated with that. We're also going to have redaction software that's included with the product for records, open records requests, which we get a lot of. Without that, we would be forced to hire additional staff just to do open records requests. The way it is stands now, we won't have to hire any additional staff. It also comes with dictation, so all the video content will be searchable. So if there's a particular phrase or word somebody's interested in that portion of the video, it would otherwise be time for time to get to that point. And now we can skip straight to that section of the video. And even years down the road, if it would come up again. The cameras themselves, some of you are aware that the cameras in the cars now, if you activate your lights, the camera turns on. With the body cams, the officers will have an opportunity to manually activate the cameras, but there's also triggers, such like the new Taser activated will activate the body camera. Drawing a firearm will activate the body camera along with the lights. There's also Bluetooth technology, so any officer that arrives and gets into Bluetooth range, their camera will be activated. With all the agencies being on the same system, if we have officers from a different agency in the village, Green Bay is your border, that same technology will continue to work. There's also a 30-second loop, just like the cars have now. So once the camera's activated, the video footage will go back 30 seconds. All these things are built in to make sure that we're able to capture the information that we're after. Now, on the most important part is the cost, which, like I said in the past, this has been cost prohibitive. Well, I have copies for everybody, if that's right.
Sure.
We just start from the, just look at 22, for example. It's going to follow your contract with the relief factor. So the patrol full-time employees is 5.4092. The patrol sergeants, you'll see that because it's in your contract, that is removed from the total. Investigative sergeants is 1.9613. You have the one DEO, Officer Vogel. The total that we're working with is minus the patrol sergeants, and that's because we would have to have them anyways. So that's a pony charge. The fleet, or is what Axon calls the squad cameras. You have two cars. So the body cam portion is $1,686 per year. And the squad cams are 2080. Now, again, that's all inclusive. That's all the storage and all the software that comes with it. So the grand total per year is $18,272.62 to the village. Now, the Green Bay Packers have promised a donation to the sheriff's office for body cams. So they're interested in assisting us with the body cam portion. Essentially, with the 5-year contract, they're paying for 2 years of our body cam portion. So what you see on the final line is the actual total due in 2022 to the Village of Alva is basically just the squad camera portion of $4,160. The way we broke it out is 100% in the first year and 50% in year 2 and 3. So then on year 4 and beyond, it will be the total amount. I don't anticipate another donation from them. So that helps all of us with budgeting. If there's any questions on that, try to start there.
Any questions? Matthew?
If the number of people on the force changes, do you anticipate the annual cost of the body cameras changing?
No, that's the cost after all of the discounts we were able to negotiate.
Okay.
Again, we have a bundle discount. We have other additional discounts for a Packer partnership because Axon signed with the Packers, so we were able to get a different pricing from them for that.
Mm-hmm.
And then we negotiated different rates for a couple different things, like the dictation. They gave us a significant break on that because we definitely wanted it, but we couldn't afford the initial cost. So, no. In fact, we are going to add two officers at the beginning of the year to the sheriff's office because the Village of Bellevue is adding services.
Okay. I did have a couple other questions, but I wanted to fill in my fellow trustees on a couple things. That with the contract that we've gone through, the body cameras are not part of that dollar amount, so we're at about $1,050,000 for next year. That does not include the cost of the body cameras and any increases in the contract. Or again, not part of the body cameras, so we'll have to budget for those dollars separately. And then when Chief Deputy Rodbeck talked about the investigative investigative sergeants, the figures are based off of the 3 or 4 year average of what the different municipalities have experienced in terms of the cases. So they look back and see how we've worked with in proportion to the other communities. So it's not just 1 year that can spike things up or down. And then the other thing with regard to investigations,
in, that's where my next, my question will come, but just so the rest of the trustees understand, is if an investigation takes someone 5 hours or 500 hours, it still counts as one investigation. That's the other thing that it's stuck in my head after going through this and learning more about the contract. So those are just other, a few things to keep in mind. But what I don't know and help to understand is what act or what is the trigger to cause an investigation to happen? What makes it, you know, in the tally mark of this, this is considered an investigation for the county, for a village, for a municipality.
And you're talking specifically for the investigative division, correct?
Yes, for that part of it, where we're starting to get the costs allocated
sure.
in that manner.
So, I have a printout here, but the cases are screened. Essentially, the patrol officers are tasked with getting the initial information and taking it as far as they're capable of taking it. Obviously, with significant limitations with hours and shifts and everything else. But once they take that case as far as they can, their reports are completed and forwarded to investigative for review. They're screened, obviously, to start with for completeness and make sure that the preliminary investigation was done as thorough as possible. If it's something just as simple as they missed talking to somebody or a simple follow-up, they'll be asked to do that. There's the jurisdictional thing, but which is something for screening, but that is it's a simple checkbox whether or not it was actually in the jurisdiction. Then there's solvability factors. So we actually have a solvability factor worksheet. So if there was a witness, name suspect, knowledge of where the suspect can be located, description of the suspect, identification of the suspect, property with identifiable characteristics, marks, or numbers that can be traced, existence of a significant MO, so is something to work with. Presence of description, which identifies a vehicle that was used in the crime. Positive results from the crime scene or evidence search. Limited opportunity for who could have committed the crime if you have only a limited number of people that you're actually working to either identify or eliminate. And then there's weighted scoring. And on the solvability worksheet, basically a score of 5 or more if the case is assigned for investigation. So each one of those things that I just listed has a weight to it. So a full name, partial name, nickname, or street name, for example, is worth 5 points. If you have that to start with, it will be investigated. Different things like a significant MO is a weight of 1. And again, I can share that with you another time. But there's supervisor override. If something does not have those things, but it's a violent crime, it's going to be investigated by the supervisor override. If the feasibility is very low and the of solvability, then it is not assigned as closed out. Anything that's closed can be reopened with further information, but if there's a belief that the crime can be solved with publicity or reasonable additional manpower, it will be assigned, and then those tactics will be used. So I hope that answers your question. So there's a lot of thought on whether or not something is assigned. Everybody in the investigative unit works together. So if there is something that requires multiple officers, then multiple officers will handle that call. Again, like I said, it's one investigative case.
Okay. And then with regard to the contract that was put together, there's plenty of detail in terms of where the costs are coming from. One of the items that we talked about a little bit internally was just the hourly rate of officers. And just trying to get a reference point of how do the hourly rates that we're being charged for officers compare with the balance of the state? Where are we against other counties?
So that's a very difficult question to answer. There's a ton of factors, as you know. So I've been sitting through union negotiations the last couple weeks, and it happens every time they bring comparables. Actually, both sides bring comparables because it's not just on the hourly wage. So there's the hourly wage, but then there's retirement, the contributions of the employer and the employee. Some agencies, the employees still don't make a contribution. The employer makes both sides of that. The medical insurance. So there's, along with that, it could be co-pays, what's required. So the union will bring one side and show their comparables and how it is favorable. The county will bring their side and show their comparables to make the same but different argument. So I can say that we are very competitive. On the dollar per hour, where we may be higher, there's other counties that are looking to make a jump in pay to stay competitive with themselves. There's no agency that is significantly over or underpaid. I think they're all very competitive, just different ways of getting to the same number.
Thank you. And then the other one, and then I'll shut up, is just that the question has come up in the past that the village has contract for sheriff services for the for everything around that, but then at the county level, we're also charged for sheriff services. So how is that not something where Village Valley residents are paying for things twice? Not necessarily double, but if all of, and I'm putting that in quotes, all of our costs are covered by the contract, why would we have that allocated to us as part of the portion of property taxes for Brown County?
Okay, so this does come up everywhere. So City of DePere, Green Bay, obviously because their side, they pay a significant portion of that for the county. That is a portion that pays for the county jail. These are not police services that are provided to the village development. Along with your county taxes, you pay for human services and all the services that they provide. The actual police services contract is statutorily required to provide police services, and that's specific for the actual officers and the equipment that are provided to the village.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Any other questions?
So how can you get us $100,000 less and get the state to pay for GPCI?
I will tell you there is significant talks into that. This is it's pretty ridiculous that this is the only prison in the state of Wisconsin that falls in this category. I don't know that it was necessarily an oversight, but there wasn't a whole lot of interest in the last year to fix it. Sheriff has been working, as we talked about, to work on that issue. They should be paying for that. But that's about as far as that can go.
Just send them a bill.
There was talk of that exactly.
I'll support that. I'll take a vote.
Councilman Raffer, I do have a question to follow up to what was said earlier about we get billed. An incident gets accounted the same way whether it's a five-hour investigation or a 500-hour investigation. And have we burrowed into that? And I'm just guessing that it's the GBCI is self-contained. There's a universe of two people or 30 people in an area at a given time, whereas if there's an incident, there's a larger universe that maybe more investigation needs to be made. So do we know for a fact that that has cut against us, that maybe there's a multitude of smaller ones at a place like GBCI as opposed to maybe out in the community? And then if you could speak to that, well, why is it done that way instead of itemized hour by hour, case by case?
I don't know that budget-wise anybody could bank on what type of investigations they're going to have for the year. We don't charge that way. I will tell you, GBCI, there's been a lot of attempts to ease the call volume over the last couple of years. So if they have something that's relatively minor, they don't call us every time anymore. For a while they did. So if they have a very minor incident, they document it, and it's not until it's repeated multiple times before they contact us, and the entire case is turned over to us. So this person did this thing X amount of times, and here's the documentation. So we're not being called for little tiny minor incidents every time. Now, I can't say they're not minor incidents, but it is a maximum security prison with a lot of people that don't have a lot to lose, so the call volume is going to be there.
I appreciate that.
I've got a follow-up to that. Have we seen, so based on that answer, have we seen a rather dramatic reduction in calls to GBCI? I know we're looking at a four-year average. Is that four-year average actually a valid indicator?
I haven't seen the four-year average of GBCI calls. We can certainly get that. I would think that there would be a decrease in that type of call. I think you would see a dramatic decrease there. I couldn't say there's a decrease in calls or investigations overall.
Okay.
I couldn't say that.
If the President Rafter, to clarify, I'm not saying if that's the way the accounting is done on an incident, total number of incidents versus hours spent, that's good or bad.
Right.
Maybe that is the proper way to do that for whatever reason. But that's just one of the questions we're going to ask when we look at this.
Sure.
What seems like a pretty unfair thing to hell with.
Sure. And I could give you an example of a homicide that happened in Ledgeview a couple of years ago where it's the entire investigative unit. So, and for several days, it's everybody, so everything else gets shut off. There would be no way for you to plan or account for that. That's just, as a community, what we have to do is take care of that incident.
Yeah, and countywide, right, communitywide.
Right, it's the right thing for the victim, so that's what we have to do.
Yes.
Yeah. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you very much, sir.
Thank you.
So, Brad, regarding the contract, we don't have numbers in our agreement that is before us, right? Annual amounts?
For the body cams?
No, for anything.
That should be all in there.
I don't see numbers in my copy.
It's on page 2 of Appendix B.
Well, I don't have an Appendix B. Maybe that's why.
Got page 9 and 9.
We've got nine pages as part of the packet that is in front of us this evening.
Well, I apologize for that. I just grabbed what the sheriff sent over and didn't realize that wasn't included.
Well, we don't have to make a decision on this tonight, because it doesn't get renewed until January.
Right. It's one of those things that, hoping to have in place prior to December 31st. So appreciate Assistant Chief coming in to
very much
do some of these. And I'll get that to the board.
Yeah, okay. You need that. Any other substantial changes to the terminology within the
No.
roles and responsibilities? Are we required to do more than we were, or?
I do have two other numbers. I'm sorry.
It's okay.
No, there's no substantial language change that's doing red flags whatsoever.
And was it reviewed by council?
This one has not been. It's pretty much the same. Okay. We certainly can send it over to our attorney and ask her to review it. Take a swipe at it before uses. You know, with our budget hearing in November, I think all the numbers that we have from the sheriff are in our budget, including we put aside some potential funding, which will cover the body cam, mm-hmm. definitely for next year.
Yeah, it should probably be. We should probably vote on this before we go to budget, right?
Yes.
So we could do it next meeting in October.
Yes. To have the board understand a little bit about the investigations. In 2018, the village had a total of 78 investigations assigned. 26 of them were SGPC Oshkosh. In 2019, we had 97 cases, 23 assigned to GBCI. Sorry, I have to get back to the other page. In 2020, we had 94 cases in the village, 45 at GBCI. Our average is roughly that 35% of all of our cases are at GBCI, and that's where we come up with the dollar figure. But we shared that with Senator Cole's office, been very helpful with that, and Representative Stephan as they keep pushing for making up that difference for the village.
Okay.
One of the thoughts that early on this year was to we push for legislative language change, or we push for budget appropriation, and the budget appropriation would have been a more simple approach to make it fair to the community, with the thought in the future that the legislative change could happen. Overall, we had a fingers crossed that we won't have GBCI in years to come.
So do we know where that whole legislative...
The bill was being circulated for signatures the last I know.
Okay, so that would have been how long?
Probably been a couple of weeks since
okay.
the last response I've had.
Okay, any questions for Brad? I would make a motion that we postpone this discussion until... We got the numbers in front of us, and legal counsel has reviewed it. So, to the next meeting. Do I have a second?
I would second that motion, yes.
Trustee Harris, any discussion? I will say, Brad mentioned earlier that we've gotten tremendous services from Brown County Sheriff Department, and now that Jason's back in the room, I will deny that. I will say that this young man has done his job with a great deal of respect and professionalism and does a great job representing the Village of Alloway and the Brown County Sheriff Department.
Thank you.
Definitely. Now we don't have to give him a raise. thank you. But I mean that. You do a great job, and the whole department does, so thank you. Okay, we have a motion to postpone this discussion until next meeting in October, before which our attorney will have a chance to review it, and we'll have the numbers now that we have our number. And a second, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed? Motion passes. Thank you very much, sir. Thanks for being here.
Thank you.
Thank you for what you do. Okay, we will go back to number six.
I think we should postpone this item too. But let me tell you why. You had asked me to look into the cost to remove and replace the sidewalk in its entirety south of 172. We did that. The cost to do that, the construction cost is estimated at $415,000. With that, you would have additional engineering, construction, inspection cost of $60,000, for a grand total, for a project total cost of $475,000. The other concern I have, not only the cost, but the county's pushing to get the plans done for this project by early middle part of November. And when we had originally scoped this project, we had scoped it as a complete sidewalk removal from 172 North Alloway Avenue and spot repair south of 172. We just, with the tight schedule, staffing availability, we don't at this time have the availability. I don't know that we have the funds to take on a larger project. I'm questioning whether or not we have the time to put this project as originally scoped together to meet the county's time frame. I have sent out the county and asked if we could delay this project, and they have told me no, that it is connected with state funding and they have to use it, or they're going to lose it. So we have, with this project, and if we stick to the original scope, our main focus will be the removal and replacement of sidewalk in its entirety north of 172 to Alloway Avenue. In conjunction with that, we're going to dig into the condition of the underground utilities, the condition of the existing water main. The water main is located underneath the sidewalk on the west side. That was installed in 1968, and the services that extend from that, I don't know how many total services we have between 172 and Alloway Avenue, but I know that 25 plus or minus are lead services, and it would make sense when we're undertaking these sidewalk improvements that we would address the lead services at that time. We're also going to dig in, and we have put out a contract to televise the storm and sanitary sewer under Webster Avenue from Roselawn North to the Green Bay limits. We know based on experience, earlier experiences this year, we know that the condition of the sanitary sewer may not be in the best shape, and we work associated with that. There's a lot going on right now, we're continually learning more about this project, and to add to it, it would be difficult to meet the county's schedule. If we were to increase the scope to include the complete replacement of a sidewalk south of 172, I don't know that we could meet their time frames. I had dug into the condition or the time frame of when the sidewalk was constructed south of 172. A large majority of that was constructed in 2011, or I should say replaced in 2011, when we had installed the water main from Roselawn North to 172. So it isn't all that old. Most cases 10 to 11 years old. There are some issues with it. I know one of the things we don't like is that it's fairly narrow. It's 5 feet or less. And what we're proposing north of 172 is a wider sidewalk. So a walk of 6 feet in most cases. And I should also say that we're running into a few challenges north of 172. In conjunction with the county's project, and the county's project is to a concrete pavement repair project that consists of spot replacement of defective concrete panels and curb and gutter. But along with that, they're going to address the failing wall condition on Webster Avenue. A lot of the walls, the majority are on the east side, are failing and need to be either removed or replaced. And they're going to do that under the concrete pavement replacement project. But where they're going to replace an existing wall, that wall will be installed in the right of way. And it will get pushed further back. In most cases, a lot of these walls are closer to the street. They're not necessarily along a right-of-way line. And the width of a wall is somewhere between 3/4 to 1 foot in width. So that is going to chew up some of the space for a wider sidewalk in those areas where there will be retaining walls. You're looking at a sidewalk width of probably closer to 5.5. And I know when we talked about this item a couple weeks ago, the desire is to have a wider walk, something closer to 6 feet. Another challenge within this project are the major utility poles that we have along the east side. And they're, for the most part, located along the right-of-way line. And, you know, we may not be able to, my hope would be that we'd be able to achieve that 6-foot width, but in some cases it might be slightly less. So there's a lot going on, and we've had a very, very busy construction season, and we're trying to squeeze this in. And I want to feel more comfortable about the project. I don't want to take any action on this until I can be a little more confident that what we're proposing we can achieve, and what we're going to do is not going to result in any rework that the county had already done if we end up delaying this project. The hope would be to do this in conjunction with the county next year, but I just don't know if we're going to have all the information that we need to be able to put together a project to coincide with theirs next year. And
when you talk about next year, are you talking about north of?
Even next year, yeah. They're proposing to do their maintenance project next year, and they want to have plans completed by early in the middle of November, and it's going to take us time to dig into the condition.
Yeah, you're talking about south of Alloway Avenue.
Yes, between 172 and Alloway Avenue. Well, their project is between Rose Lawn and Alloway Avenue, and when I had discussed this with you a couple weeks ago, our intent was to focus on the sidewalk replacement between 172 and Alloway Avenue, with just doing a bare minimum for repairs south of 172, just more or less spot replacement of defective panels, of whatever we would have to remove to remove a liability or a hazard. Mm-hmm. Was our intent.
When is the next part of the county project taking place? North of Alloway Avenue.
That was, I believe, 2024, from Alloway Avenue north to, to the Green Bay limits.
Okay. Well, I'll make a motion on this item then. And I will make a motion that we continue the current plan, do the spot repairs minimal, south of 172, and to incorporate that as start talking to the county right now about the following project, and take a look at incorporating the sidewalks south of 172 when we're doing north of Alloway Avenue, that next project in 2024.
We can do that. They had originally planned for 2024, but because of our Lightwood Street project, they pushed that project back to 2025.
Okay, that's fine.
Yeah.
So my motion is to push it back. I don't want it to be forgotten personally. either we address the sidewalks before 2025 or we roll it up into that project. That's my motion.
I just have a question.
Yes.
How are we going to address the infrastructure then?
I'm trying to. That's my hope is to put this all together and bid it with the county project in 2022, as originally scoped. But I don't know that that's going to be possible. Push come to shove, then this project should be delayed to 2023, and then I know that wouldn't be it wouldn't be desirable because we're going to be back in that same area by the following year, and it would be an inconvenience to the residents. And
county doesn't have other projects that could use LRIP funds for.
And that's why I need to have more discussions with them because it's this is a lot to take on in a short notice.
Yeah.
And that's why I need to postpone this so we can talk. We're gonna continue with the design of a sidewalk between Highway 172 and Alloway Avenue. We're gonna continue with that. But I have to talk to them to find out if there's any chance we can postpone this. And I have, but they've said no, but I need to express to them my concern for this.
President Rafter?
Yes.
Is there, I realize it could be an additional expenditure, but is there an external resource that we could access to allow us to try to process things by Thanksgiving? We pull somebody else in to allow us to take care of stuff north of 172 as well as south of 172 next year. It might be worth, I have no idea what the figure is, as long as it's reasonable. I realize it's a lot to take in, get done. I don't know if that's an option, if that's been considered. Could it happen fast enough? I don't know, but I'd like to at least look at that option so that we get everything done in 2022 in conjunction with the project with Brown County. I don't know if there's a way to do the planning of the, let's just say, the north section above 172 and then delay the planning of the section south by a month to just give us till December for that section of it. I know you want to try to do it all together. I get that. I'm just trying to spitball ideas of something to buy us a little bit more time to get it done in 2022.
I think the other thing that we have to take into consideration is the overall cost of this project. And I had bonded for this project under the idea that under the intent to just make spot repair to the sidewalk south of 172 with the complete removal and replacement north of 172 to Alloway Avenue. We had bonded for that, and we're still going to have some shortcomings because I hadn't anticipated county participation, and they've said no, they don't have the money to assist for this. If we're looking to take on a much larger project and remove and replace the sidewalk in its entirety south of 172, we're looking at an additional $475,000. I don't know where we find the funding for that.
Okay.
I was hopeful to make up the difference that we currently have with the originally scoped project with tin mines, and that's a possibility because a portion of the north half of the project is located within the tin, and that was brought up that could fill in the gap. If this project's moved back to 2023, and we could bond for the additional expense. So we're going to have to find a way to fund the utility improvements that we may have and will likely have associated with this project, and that could be ARPA funds. But this project has gotten a lot bigger than I had originally anticipated, and I just need more time to look into the challenges.
Okay. Chris, did you have a question?
Yeah, maybe a couple of them. I remember being excited a couple of weeks ago that 4-foot sidewalk in my part of Old Alloway from Alloway Avenue to 172 in Heritage Hill. It's 4 foot.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
Pretty old. And hemmed in by walls in some spots. We were talking 2 weeks ago, that would be made a 6-foot sidewalk,
yep.
Which sounded great. But now you're saying the reality is you probably just can't take a utility pole, a power pole, and move it back 2 feet.
I think in most cases we can meet the objective. It's just working through some of those challenges. It takes time just to court. There's a possibility that we could move those poles.
Okay.
Given WPS enough time, we could possibly move those. I haven't even seen a plan yet. I don't know exactly where those poles are located in relationship to the right-of-way.
There's not much right-of-way. I guess that's a private.
No, it's tight, yes.
Yeah.
We have, you're right, in most cases the sidewalk is narrow and we do have some space. We do have some right-of-way behind it. for the most part, a 6-foot sidewalk.
Okay. So what's on the table now is you're still trying for 6-foot.
Yes.
Throughout there, we'll see, but there might be a couple spots where it's tough.
Right.
Because of the right-of-way poles. And then on the other side, from the prison out to Rose Lawn, it's mostly 5-foot wide now?
Yes.
Okay. Mm-hmm. And most of it is new to from 2011?
Yes.
Okay. That sounds pretty good to me. But I can see that if we have this beautiful wide on our main north-south, that it's 6 feet wide here, that at some later date, maybe we would want to make that kind of wide sidewalk. Now,
yes, yep.
after everything's in, after all the utilities in, the road is in, 2 years from now, 5 years from now, can we put in a 6-foot sidewalk instead of a 5, or is that cost prohibitive and now is the time you have to do it?
Not necessarily. Now isn't it, no, that part of the project could be delayed and we could work it into our CIP. It could be in 2025, as you suggested, when we're hopeful to make some improvements to Webster Avenue, north of Alloway Avenue.
Because that would be nice when we cut the ribbon on the beautiful, maybe re-engineered section from Alloway Avenue to the Green Bay city limits, to also have some improvements, those improvements on the south end, so we've got, just uninterrupted, pretty wide, safer pavement. So. And from a safety concern, are traffic loads about the same in the section near my house, a couple blocks down from here to Chill, as opposed to the area south of, that's off the top of your head. They're probably similar.
It is close. I can get to that, but off the top.
What's your, it's in the same ballpark.
Yeah.
They're both busy streets, really busy streets, and relatively narrow sidewalks right up to it. So that's my 2 cents worth on that.
Okay. Any other comments, questions, thoughts? I made a motion. We didn't get a second, did we? Okay. I'm going to replace that motion. I'll just say I'll make a motion to stick with your current plan. Don't do anything right now south of 172 with the sidewalks.
Okay.
But don't forget him.
But you'd still have spot repair south.
Correct.
Okay.
Stick with the current plan. Yep.
Okay. We're going to do everything we can to put together these plans.
Okay, we can get a second. Do I get a second? Trustee Green. Okay, discussion. I know you probably sense frustration on my part, but my frustration is surely not with you. It is with, and it's not with the county, it's with being pushed into making a decision, especially when we find the scope of this project just continues to grow with our infrastructure.
Right.
And it's simply not responsible to put, I'm not going to use the term, it's not responsible to put fix
top layer when the bottom layer is falling apart. So I encourage you to continue to talk to the county, and we should maybe bring our county supervisors into the discussion or whoever. But we need, I understand they get funds that they have to use, but we have to use them responsibly. And I don't know that this is a responsible way. I know the county is trying to help us by not moving forward with the project on the north end, but it didn't help us much by just transferring it. So I know they did their best, but I still believe there's got to be a smarter way. We have smart people. We can figure out. You're smart, Sean. Go figure it out.
You know what? The other part of this is it takes time to understand what we have.
Yeah.
And I'm getting a better understanding of what we have. And, you know, when I first got here, I heard about this Webster Avenue project. Well, that's a huge project. And you just, as you dig, you find more and more and more. And things were shuffled around to defend the county. We're pushing on a streetscaping project north of Alloway Avenue. They had to reshuffle their projects around a little bit.
I get it.
And they moved this project up. And
I'm sure DePier needs something done to their roads that they can use funds for, right? Okay. I have a motion to stick with the plan in a second. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion passes. Thank you very much, Sean, for all your hard work. Keep that up. Item number 8, approval of certified survey map for Mullen Associates on behalf of AJS LLC for parcel AL25-1, located at 1430 Marine Street.
Move to approve.
Ooh. Is that a second for you?
No.
Okay, well, let's... do I have a second? I'll take that second for discussion
purposes.
Okay,
just for discussion purposes.
Any discussion, Trustee Green?
I'll let Brad start, and then...
It's Trevor's recommendation not to move forward with this tonight, so if we could postpone it to the next meeting, it would be greatly appreciated.
Okay.
Withdraw my motion.
Or I can make a substitute one to table. You
yes,
need
please.
Me to withdraw.
Yeah, make a substitute.
I'll make a substitute motion to table to the next meeting. We need some more information on this as well, so he will
okay, we'll
be
save that for discussion.
Yeah, bringing more.
Okay, so table. Second.
I'll second that motion.
Trustee Harris, any discussion?
Quick question on when these, and maybe I'm just reading it too closely, if and when it comes up for recommendation, the way it was stated tonight, there was an understanding that the private road would still be accessible to the public. Do we need a more concrete, no pun intended, word for understanding?
Here's where my discussions with Trevor get this. The term public is evidently not very well defined. So
okay.
That's one of
okay,
the things coming back next week.
Okay,
is
that's, then we
a
don't
huge
need to
issue down
go
there
further.
Right now.
Okay, very good. We have a motion to table until the next meeting. In a second, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion passes. Thank you. We'll take number 9A through C. Do I have a motion? On the consent agenda, I have a problem.
So moved.
Trustee Green. Second by Trustee Sampson. Any discussion? We have a motion to approve the consent agenda in a second. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed? Motion passes. Thank you. Update on number 10, update on ash tree removal project.
Yes, the board had asked for an update on our project for the ash tree removals, which is north of Highway 172. Our staff has been working on the area that is east of Webster Avenue, and they're about halfway through the removals of the trees within that area.
They have, I think it was a total of 45 total, so they're about halfway through that. Anticipate being done by the end of this month. The contractor, which is contracted to do the removals west of Webster and north of 172, he has not started yet. He's starting this week. He was delayed because of the tornado that hit Ripon. He's been down in Ripon for the last month or so. So, but he's going to be starting this week. Anticipates being done by the end of the month as well with the removals. So then following that, then he has stump removals and restoration work to be done. So plans to be done with that before the ground freezes. So a few other just notable items. What our staff's been working on in 2021 for tree removals, they've done about right around 100 trees, give or take. Removals, about 85% of those have been ash trees. Not only in this area that's north of 172, but they've also been working down in the area that's down towards the Depere border, working on removals down there in the Kenny Street area. There's quite a few ash down there, so they've been working down there as well. For next year, we are budgeting some funds for, again, ash tree removal south of 172. We're looking at a projection of trying to knock out about 100 to 125 to 150 trees. We've got some funds budgeted for that. And then and we're looking that would potentially be about two-thirds of what we have left. So then, in 2023, a few more, some more money's budgeted to try to get the rest of them done. There still are dead ash trees in our natural areas, still in our parks, but I'm not seeing those as high a priority as the ones that are in front of people's houses. So we're going to continue to concentrate on those at this point. So, any questions, I guess, with that?
The feedback I got on my street was they did a great job because our guys took those down. And
Sure.
No. Nobody wanted to see them go, but yeah.
You don't want to see a dead tree standing there.
You don't either. So, and they were getting, yeah, but they said the guys did, the neighbors that contacted me said they did a really good job. So please let them know.
Okay. Well,
okie doke. Move on to item number 11, discussion regarding ward map for the Village of Alloway based on the 2020 census. Carrie.
Hello. I just want to give a little bit of background on the redistricting process. So once every 10 years, redistricting takes place based on population shifts over time. The 2020 census population for the Village of Alloway was 14,156 people, compared to 2010, which was 13,975. The tentative supervisory redistrict map was approved at the Brown County Supervisor meeting that Jim had attended on September 22nd, approving 26 districts in Brown County. And it's very similar to the current supervisory map. And Alloway will continue to have two districts, District 14 and 15, for County Board Supervisor, with wards 1 to 3 located in District 15, as you can see on the map here that I provided. This is the proposed draft of the ward map that I've been working on with Brown County Planning Department throughout the past week. I also included tonight our current ward map and a breakdown of the population numbers in each ward. The draft contains 9 wards, and each ward must contain between 600 and 2,100 residents per ward. Wards cannot cross supervisory district boundaries, and I want to note that Ward 9 is the Correctional Institute, so we have no voters there, and we no longer need to have Ward 10, as it can now be incorporated in with Ward 8. Ward 10 never had any voters, as it was annexed in 2015 with the City of De Pere. Due to tight deadlines because of census and supervisory district map delays, the county is asking for final approval of our map by October 21st. So therefore, a draft of the map is in front of you tonight as a discussion item so you can see what is being proposed. Final approval in resolution form will be brought forth at the next meeting. Since our population didn't change significantly and the new district maps are roughly the same as the previous ones, the draft of the wards are fairly similar. So I'm just looking to get the board's thoughts or suggestions to the proposed draft of the map.
Any thoughts?
Look good by me.
Yeah, I like how three grew a little bit and two went down a little bit because we're going to have increased population along Webster when our developments go in. And that was one of the most populated wards. So that'll even things out. But otherwise, everything looks pretty much the same, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okey-doke. Nice work. Thank you very much. So you're going to bring it back then at the next meeting?
Yep.
Okay. Yeah, and our supervisory districts basically stay the same as they did before. And some of the recommendations were much different. Mm-hmm. So it's nice that we got to stay the same. Okay. Item number 12. Anyone want to see something on a future agenda? Hearing none. I will accept the motion to move into Wisconsin or in a closed session pursuant to Wisconsin Statute 1985-1E, deliberating or negotiating the purchasing of public properties, the investing of public funds, or conducting other specified public business whenever competitive or bargaining reasons require a closed session.
Move to move into closed session under Wisconsin 1985 paragraph E.
You're getting very good at that. Do I get a second?
Second.
Trustee Green. Roll call. Trustee Harris.
Aye.
Trustee Atwood.
Aye.
President Rafter. Aye. Trustee Green.
Aye.
Trustee Sampson.
Aye.
Trustee Deutsch.
Aye.
We are in closed.